Benjamin Franklin once said, in wine there is wisdom, in beer there is freedom, and in water there's bacteria. No bacteria here. This is On the Back Bar. On the Back Bar is your gateway to talking to the people behind the scenes at bars, distilleries, and vineyards around the world. We'll talk to the experts in the industry about future trends, people, spirits, cocktails, wine, and everything else. So kick your feet up, pour your favorite drink, and hang out on the back bar. This is Christopher Menning.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to On the Back Bar podcast. I got two guests here today. Guillaume, welcome back to the show. Thank you very much. And Sophie, welcome to Bangkok.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. I know you're here with the wine merchant, sort of discussing about your wine and showing the world about Riesling and Spätburgunder. I hope I got that right. But hi, how's it going? Welcome to Bangkok.
Thank you. No, it's very nice to escape the German winter and to enjoy some warm weather, some sun. So very good. Happy to be here.
Is it first time here or?
Yeah, first time in Bangkok, first time in Thailand.
Okay.
Unfortunately, only a very quick stopover, but yeah, still very nice.
Great, great. And obviously you work with Guillaume at the Wine Merchant. Great people to work with. Guillaume, what's your plan over the next couple of days? Where are you going to show Sophie?
Hello everyone. So actually it will be just one day. We have a quite intense day today. When we have wineries coming, we will usually try to do a tasting for professionals of the industry. So all the people working in the hotel and restaurant, to show them about the wines, make them understand more about the winery we are having with us. We also try to do those kind of event with some of our private customers, a regular or VIP or just friends for the same topic. And we finish with a wine dinner. This time we have only a short day, so we took time to do this beautiful podcast. And then at 3 p.m. we go to our Lang Suan shop, where we're going to actually mix a few professionals and few private customers for a masterclass. And then we move to Sering for a wine dinner, with 20 people, but I'm sure it will be a quite beautiful dinner.
Nice. Well, thank you for bringing the wine as well. I'm very excited to try. So I'm guessing this is the Riesling.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So tell us about the vineyard and the winery.
So we are like a very old family winery. Mm-hmm. We just celebrated our 225th anniversary last year.
Wow, so that's impressive.
I'm the eighth generation running the winery now, together with my father. Mm. So it's an old estate, very family. So like we all live on the estate, so it's how you imagine it.
Yeah.
And it's also very like medium size, so we don't want our estate to be too big because we want to be involved in winemaking. And very classic for Germany, we grow 70% Riesling and 30% Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. So Spätburgunder, as you pronounce very well.
Thank you.
But sometimes Pinot is easier. Mm. And so that's the structure of the winery. Okay. And we brought the Riesling today because it's just what we are known for in Germany.
Yeah. Definitely. 255 years. That's incredible. So you must be one of the oldest sort of vineyards in the area. Would that be correct? Or?
Yeah. So there are some estates that are a little bit older.
Okay.
But then like those wineries that are between 200 and 250 years old, it's a very like classic age in our region because we also know that we have wine growing in the family since the 1500s. But our family, like the people, they didn't own the vineyards. They just worked in the vineyards and they had to give away to the grapes to the people that owned the land. But then when the French came, so like Germany got part of France, our area with Napoleon. And then the people that owned the land like flew to the other part of Germany. And so our family, as well as many others, were able to buy the land they had been working on for generations. Mm. And that's when the winery was founded. So many of the wineries are that old, but not many are like still there and still run by families. Many wineries have been sold. So yeah, we are happy to still be a family producer.
Sure. It's a great wine. Very delicious. Why is Riesling so popular in the area? I'm guessing that's because of the grapes and the vineyard and the region, I guess. But Riesling seems to be very popular these days from what I see. Is that correct?
We are happy that it's getting more popular because it has not always been that well known because, of course, Germany is a little bit of a like cool climate wine growing region. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we can talk about climate change later. It's but Riesling is a cool climate variety, so it's really well adjusted to our climate, and it expresses our soils very well. And I think that like people all over the world are slowly recognizing that it is a very like fresh style of wine. Like it has acidity, it has like this nice saltiness, nice minerality, and it's always in our estate, all the Rieslings are dry, so they don't have any residual sugar, and they are also not that high in alcohol. And so it's very nice to enjoy them in like warm weather because it's just a refreshing style of wine.
Mm, okay. And good for food pairing, right?
We'll see tonight. I mean, actually, we also have some food to try today. So
yeah. So Guillaume, let's get into that. What did you bring? So I know you wanted to bring some Thai food, right? To see.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, we have solo chef Ton and Tam. So owner of Nusara,
Le Dou,
and Ban. So this one is from Ban. They send us a few snacks. The idea is not to get too full, but to try some Thai food with those German wines.
Okay.
Because I think it's one of the best pairing you can find actually many times. People, so it's something that we have to change, where people will associate very often the Riesling as a sweet wine, which is not true anymore. You can find, of course, sweet Riesling, but most of the production is moving toward to dry. Maybe at some point you can also explain us a little bit about the Spätlese, Auslese, which actually doesn't make much sense anymore, but still are the rules. Have you heard about this before?
No idea. No, completely oblivious.
So we will come to that. And anyway, the sweetness was always a good point with the spiciness of the food you can have in Thailand. But now we are not necessarily talking about sweetness. So there is many aromas that Sophie just mentioned that actually goes perfectly with this food.
Okay.
So let's see.
So Riesling, there's a spectrum, right? So you get dry to sweet. Is that kind of it?
So like if you look back into the German history, like still in the 90s and 2000s, it was too cold to get Riesling ripe every year.
Right.
So it's a new thing that we get ripe grapes every year. It's something that we have only had like in the past 15 or 20 years. So it's a recent thing. So Germany has been actually benefiting of climate change in the last years because the yields got more stable, the grapes get ripe. Mm-hmm. And because like in those older vintages that have been like cold years, you need the acidity levels have been so high that you needed the residual sugar to cover up the lack of ripeness. So this is why many people still think that German wines are sweet, because most of the wines in the 90s have been sweet. And like my grandfather started to make dry wines sometimes in the 90s, and it was a very modern thing. People were like talking and questioning if you can do it, if you can drink the wines. But in the past years, it became very normal that German wines are dry. And this is also why what you mentioned, Guillaume, that the German classification system doesn't really work anymore.
Okay.
So the German wine law has always been classifying the wines by sweetness. And this was based on the ripeness. So the Spätlese, the Auslese, all those classic labels that we know, like you can use the name of the quality level up from a certain level of ripeness. But now that we get ripe grapes everywhere and every year, it doesn't really make sense to divide quality levels in ripeness, because we know also from other places of the world that grapes also can be overripe. Everything can get overripe, and then it doesn't taste good anymore. And so the system has been changing, and we have been moving to a classification system that is much more similar to Burgundy now. So if like the wine that we are drinking is a Gimmeldinger Kapellenberg, and Gimmelding is the name of the village and Kapellenberg is the name of the vineyard. So it's a Premier Cru site.
Okay.
And we call it Erste Lage in German.
Erste Lage.
So it's so we also now have a system where like where you can see that the closer than the origin is like labeled, the better is the wine, roughly.
Okay, amazing. So German wine's changing a lot then, it seems, in terms of like you mentioned climate as well. Is that the reason why it's become so much more popular these days, you think?
I think in general, like quality levels have risen quite amazingly. Of course, like the German wines have been very famous in the 1850s. So there was German wine for the opening of the Suez Canal in Europe, for example. Mm-hmm. So they have been very famous and much more expensive than the wines from Bordeaux, for example. Mm-hmm. But then after the First and Second World War, of course, like the markets broke down, no one was buying German wine anymore. And then Germany got into a little bit of a crisis and people were producing like very cheap, sweet wine that was not good quality. And that is the problem that like most people all over the world still remember right. those cheap and sweet wines that didn't really taste good. Mm-hmm. But then in the past 20 or 30 years, like German wine growing has found back like to quality.
Okay.
And this has really changed.
Good, good. Yeah, no, I love it. It's very nice, actually. And so in terms of your role in the vineyard, I guess you grew up from birth with your family as well. What's your role? What do you do? More business development? Are you really hands-on in the field?
So when I joined the team, of course, I grew up in the winery, so we were like yeah. playing in vineyards, like we were like riding with the tractors in and out with our friends. Nice. And so we always have been there. And I joined the team quite early on because I'm the youngest of four children. I'm the oldest of four children. And so I was always like traveling with my father and things like that. So for me, it mostly started with like good food, coming to nice places, mm-hmm. meeting nice people. Like with wine, you always meet nice people. And so I was really fascinated by the world. And then the fascination for wine growing came a little bit later when I went to university to study wine growing.
Oh, nice.
And now I do a little bit of everything. So it's many young women that join the estates go into like marketing and social media and things like that. And of course, there's other things that I have to do too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I also want to make wine. So
yeah, cool.
And good wines.
Yeah,
good wines too.
And now in the cellar we split up a little bit. So when I joined the team, my father was only 54 and I was 24, so it was obvious that he had to keep on working for another few years. Mm-hmm. And so we split up a little bit in the beginning and I took over responsibility of the Spätburgunder and he kept the Rieslings. And because we also did some major changes with the Pinots, and the Rieslings had already been positioned very well, so we like it's just like the normal fine-tuning that you do every day on everything. Okay. And but now we are bringing it together a little bit, but on the like day-to-day basis, I'm like usually checking the vineyards with our teams in the morning, and then we go to the office for some time. If there's work in the cellar, then we are in the cellar, so we're just like moving through everything.
Yeah, wearing many hats.
Yes.
Okay. So are you used to Thai food? Have you tried a lot before in the past or?
Mm-hmm. Like there's a big wave of like I'd say Asian food in Germany. So, it's not necessarily always Thai food or Japanese food or Chinese food. Like sometimes you have restaurants, they just like mix everything together.
Fusion. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but cool. What we had yesterday is a little bit of another quality level than what we get at home. So I'm excited to try.
Good.
Yesterday they had dinner at the Veranda, which is the river restaurant at the Mandarin Oriental.
Oh, nice.
Let's say the deli, but they have beautiful food. Just for salad is very nice already, but yep. for the Thai food is very top. So
good. So Guillaume, what do we have today? And also tell us about your experience with pairing Thai food with wines, because obviously you've been here nearly about the same amount of time as me.
I've been here for a few years, but I've never really worked in Thailand with German wines, only 1 year when I was a sommelier. Since I moved to the sales side, or let's say supplier side, we didn't have many wineries. We just had one, which was Sibylkunst. Which is very, very, very beautiful, and also a few Alsacian wine, but Alsace and Germany are still quite different. So we decided to move to this market for many reasons, because of the quality increase, because of the contact my boss had, and also the climate change was a big change in our vision. So my boss Aman decided to import many wineries from Germany, Austria. Now we have 20 of them, which is quite impressive, but 20 of them which are very different one from each other. So it's lovely because every day you try a new winery, you try a new philosophy, you try a new style. So we had a wine dinner not so long ago with Marcus Molitor at Nusara, actually, also the restaurant of Chefton. Mm. And the food was perfect, just perfect to pair with those wine. Of course, they have a wider range of grapes. They have like Spat Burgunder, Weiss Burgunder. They have 150 cuvées, so we can go on for a while.
The biggest assortments in Germany.
It's insane, right. But yet each cuvée is very small because they have, I don't remember, I think 90 hectares, but divided in 150 different cuvées. So, but anyway, to go back on your question, the pairing was beautiful. Tonight it's a bit different. We had Turing, so no Thai food, but it's a German
restaurant.
It's two Michelin stars, so okay. It's quite something.
But it is a very good experience to go to. Yeah.
And so today, Tam, he prepared for us some sun-dried pork, some prawn beignet, some pork satay with a sauce to eat with, and some chayot salad, which is a Thai salad.
Kind of looks like larb as well, right?
Yeah, similar style. Yeah, so yeah. The nose actually reminds us that. So.
Good. Well, enjoy. Please dig in. I mean, Thai food's great. It's probably one of the only cuisines where it has the whole balance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sweet, salty, sour.
No, of course.
Savory. Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I probably don't eat as much Thai food as I should, considering I live here. And obviously street food as well. We have some great options. So.
No, for sure. I mean, we talked about it before. We even brought Chateau d'Yquem to eat street food in Chinatown.
It's so cool.
it was just an amazing pairing. Okay, now we go on the sweet side, of course. But I mean, the flavors in Thai food are so big. You have so many choices that you can find a wine with each plate. Of course, you know, cannot pair every wine with every plate. If you have too much spices and we try the Spat Burgunder, you might not taste it. Mm. But it's good to try to discover and make your own judgment.
I think like that it's very similar to Riesling, because Riesling also has those like different shades of taste between like very low in alcohol, dry with acidity and fresh, but also like richer with a bit of sweetness. And then also like we like our Rieslings also to age a little bit. So now we are having a 21 vintage. So it's a very young wine. But if you store it for another 2 or 3 years, at least it will change its aroma a little bit. The acidity will like go in the background and it will be tasting a little bit more like honey and nuts. And then it also pairs very well with dishes that are a bit more spicy, because then the Riesling gets a little bit more creamy. Yeah. So I think if you have a Spätburgunder, you have a very fixed idea of what it will taste like, because of course we all know the Pinots from Burgundy, and we know that the Pinot has a nice cherry fruit. It's dry. It has been aged in barrique. So it's a very classic style. So if you don't go to Jura in France, then most of the Pinots taste in the same style section. But with Riesling, I think this is also what makes it a bit more complicated. If people want to buy a bottle, that you have to look at it a little bit more closely. And you also have to learn the word trocken, which is dry, which means that it doesn't have any residual sugar. To decide like what you have in the bottle that you are buying. But like that Riesling is very nice because you can pair it with thousands of different things, because you can have like thousands different styles of Riesling.
It's very versatile then.
Definitely. Yeah.
For people who don't know about Riesling, talk to me as if I don't know anything as well, because I kind of don't, but where do people start? You know, like where do you recommend to, if they haven't tried Riesling before and they want to?
I would start by buying a dry Riesling, because I think this expresses the general style of Riesling best. So I would recommend to start by buying dry, because if you move into the sweeter wines, there are very different levels of sweetness that make it a little bit more complicated to understand like what you are drinking. So dry is the style to go. And then I would also go for like a young Riesling, like one of the recent vintages. And then I'd go to, of course, Germany, because like we are a Riesling country. Like you can get great Rieslings also like in Australia or in Alsace. But I think like Germany is the reference to go to.
Please do try some of the food. I feel bad if it just sits there.
Please go on.
Because
otherwise, also I want to add, like Riesling is when you start to learn about wine, Riesling is the first wine usually people will remember, because it has a typicity which is very understandable, faster. So like for example, if you do blind tasting, it will be a grape, most likely the only grape that you can find very, very easily.
Yeah.
Of course, not as you said, when you go more on the sweet side, or it will evolve in time, but I realized, like, when you do blind tasting, this is the beauty of it. You smell, you feel like, mm-hmm. yeah, sometimes it's not, but, mm-hmm. and you will see, like, wow, it is Riesling, yeah. actually. And so it's a great, very easy to understand, but yet I have a lot of choice, a lot of road to make. Just with Chris Mann Winery, we have, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 labels in stock. We have more coming in, mm-hmm. and each one of them are so different from the others. This one should be already one of the top cuvées, if I'm mm-hmm. not wrong. And first time I tried today, actually, I opened it yesterday around 8 p.m. because I find, as you said, the young vintages, the DNA of Riesling, you can keep it for so long. And sometimes you even need to decant it if it's a bit too young vintages, which is quite fun for white wine because yeah. many people are not used to decant white wine. Myself, I love to yeah. do those kind of things, to open the bottle one day before. Okay. The first time my girlfriend saw me do that, she was like, what are you doing? So I said, it's for tomorrow. I was like, yeah, it is for tomorrow.
It's really so, decanted the day before.
But not necessarily decant. Like, okay, decant will be a more faster process to make the wine breathe. But when you open a bottle, just let it rest, you will have a slow breathing, let's say.
Okay.
So it's more gentle, and of course, the impact will be different.
Okay. Let's talk about that, because there are a lot of people that, I mean, most people listen to the show are in the industry. But yeah, please. But some people probably, there's a lot of terms they won't know. So when we talk about breathing, it's letting the wine be reacted to oxygen, I guess, and that changes the flavor. So I know, of course, red wines, that there are some you need to do that too.
Yeah, it's oxidation, it's called. Mm.
And how long would you normally have to do that for? And I mean, white wines, I didn't know that was a thing.
I think it depends on how old the wine is. Mm. Because of course, like through the cork, you always get a little bit of oxygen, and so the wine develops. So we know that the wine that is 20 years old will taste different than the wine that is old. Only 1 year old.
Okay.
So the older the wine gets, the less decanting you will need.
Okay.
So if you have a wine from a very recent vintage, then it usually will benefit a lot from the air that it would otherwise get through the cork within like 10 or 15 or 20 years. So if you have a like 50 year old Bordeaux, mm-hmm. you would maybe taste it first before you put it in a decanter, mm-hmm. To decide whether it's like still needs air or whether it has like developed and opened up nicely enough so you don't need it anymore.
Mm. Okay. Good to know. And in terms of like decanting, how long would you normally have to leave it in the decanter for?
It depends. To be honest, like each wine is very different.
Mm.
And that's why, like, okay, last year we had the chance to organize mini dinners. And with each chateau, each winery visiting, it's always a different approach. So it really depends. Even if you think you know sometimes, it's always good to ask the winemaker, because nobody knows their wine better than the winemaker.
Mm.
But let's say, like, yeah, me, I will have tendency to decant young wine more than old wines to kick out the acidity out a little bit. Mm. But the whole wine, sometimes you don't have choice, like some strong Bordeaux need also this push.
Mm.
So it really depends. Riesling, I'm still learning. So I love to discover that you can open the bottle 1-2 days before and you get like a different taste. Last weekend, we opened a few bottles with my boss on Friday night, and he opened it the day before also, and you could drink it like it was just beautiful. Mm. So
yeah.
Yeah, I think it's also very important to try to remember what you do in life, take note on the wine you try, because you will never stop learning, and you can't know everything. So it's always good to communicate and ask, I would say.
Mm.
She can say, I text her a lot, like, what should I do with the wine? It's very important. I want the impact on you today or on the people this afternoon or tonight to be as it should be for those wines.
Okay, good. I mean, I think it's very much like for Thai drinkers, I think it's a good wine, actually, known Thai palate a little bit. What do you think, Ian? Because obviously you know the market pretty well, better than me anyway.
No, definitely. We're still trying to change this vision of Riesling being only sweet. That's why we're doing those master classes. We're inviting people to try, because there is such a huge range to discover. Still, Thailand is a growing market in terms of wine.
Mm.
People, you know, you have basic to start with, which are where, let's say, Italy, Tuscany, Piedmont, Bordeaux, Burgundy in France. And then more and more the country is growing on that. There is some beautiful importers, beautiful wine being imported by other importers. So people have the chance to try. We also doing the part of the job. I think we have 20 amazing wineries now. And the idea, the only way to make it change, to make it grow, it's to keep trying, keep doing events. So.
Okay, cool. So, yeah. Any big things you're seeing in Thailand right now, like wine trends that are sort of appearing? Because you just wrote an article for us in the January issue for Gastronomer, which is pretty cool. But yeah, what's going on in the industry?
To be honest, I've many people I haven't seen for a while and tell me like, oh, what's new? But yeah. Nothing much is new, actually. Many things are the same. So life is going on, which is good. Yet, we had a little... Okay, 2023 was a nice nice year for the business. A bit more tough in September, October, and a bit better at the end of the year. But since January 24, everything slowed down a little bit. We never know. There is always excuses. We always hope Chinese New Year and Valentine will bring back the market up. And then you go back to April, you have Songkran. And then after it's summer. So there is always reason. Let's say that there is a little slowdown on this beginning of the year. We keep going. We keep. My boss always say in crisis, there is always opportunity. So we keep going. We keep having people visiting us and hoping for the best. But yeah, it's a bit question mark on this beginning of the year.
Yeah, okay.
But otherwise, nothing much changed. On our side at the Wine Merchant, we will open a new shop.
Another one? You're just rolling them out at the moment. There's so many coming.
So okay. We don't talk much about it because the location is not, let's say, not. It's still to be discovered on the people. So we're having fun with that, which is nice. But the idea is to open, let's say, our benchmark, the top shop of the Wine Merchant, not putting the order down, but on trying to make even higher
like a flagship. Concept.
Yeah, basically like a flagship.
Okay.
So you'll see by yourself very soon, guys. We have many things in mind. We'll try our best.
Well, your store's always very beautiful, like really well designed and nice. It's just, you can either go there for wine shopping or you can go for a glass of wine. It's like,
yeah, absolutely. The new concept will be a bit bigger. The idea will also to have more food choice, so people can also go for dinner, for lunch, not as a restaurant because we are still a wine supplier, but giving more choice in that part.
But you've got so Wine Merchant Langsuan is the latest one, I think.
Yeah.
You've got one in Mandarin Oriental.
So the first one was inside the Mandarin Oriental, the Wine Merchant shop, which was actually a big boom because it was during COVID, the places were empty, and we decided to invest there. Then we had another one in Suring in Phuket, then another one in Sukhumvit, and then last one in Long Suan Road. So basically, we try to be well-positioned a bit everywhere. And we also have another one called Maison du Vin, which is a partnership with King Power in Mahanakhon Cube, so next to the Mahanakhon Tower. And of course, the first outlet that we had, which is a restaurant, La Casa Nostra, which is 100% of our wine.
Of course, yeah. La Casa Nostra is a great Italian restaurant.
Beautiful, yeah.
But the wines are very well priced as well.
Yeah, of course, really? It's the same concept. When you have one supplier in a restaurant, it helps a lot. But yeah, it's an amazing place. You can go for a glass of wine and a lunch set. It's very nice. Or you can go for a few bottles and a romantic dinner. Even with friends, it works. So yeah, nice.
Yeah, cool.
So yeah, that's what's happening. We keep going and hope for the best.
So Sophie, is this your sort of area of the world that you have to look after? Do you come over this way quite a lot?
So we, like in general, we try to travel as little as possible because of course we try to be in the vineyard as much as we can, and there COVID actually has helped quite a lot because many of our importers had been used to us coming like once a year or every 2 years or things like that, and we are now exporting to 26 markets, so if I visit every market every year then I'll be traveling a lot. And I think you cannot be like, we are not a big estate with an export manager that only travels around the world all the time. And so like we are trying to visit the places every few years, and then we are trying to put things together like we are doing now. Like we will fly on to Australia to meet our importer there. And then on the way back, we will go to Phuket to also meet some people there again. So it's a very nice mix. But in general, it's really nice that we can like just ship the wines and the wines will speak for themselves, and it does not always need us to be with them.
They have their own personalities, right? So it's very easy to, And in terms of like global markets, so you said 26 markets, where's the strongest market for you? Where are people drinking German wines more?
So in general, like in Europe, it's especially the Scandinavian countries, like Sweden, Norway, also the Netherlands, Denmark. Those are all countries that are very strong for German wine, I think, because like we have the, like we are the closest wine markets.
Right.
If the people travel, they will pass through Germany all the time. So they have known German wines for a very long time. But we have also like moved very nicely in other markets. Like we work very well with the UK, which has also always been a very traditional market. Mm-hmm. Like France is the only country in Europe, I think, that doesn't buy any wine of ours.
Oh, yeah?
Because they drink their own wine all
course,
the time.
Yeah. True.
Different. And
so strange.
Yeah. And apart from that, yeah, it's the classic markets. Like it's the US. Yeah. Australia is also a good market for us.
That's interesting, yeah, because they also have their own wines, right?
Quite yes, good, so. They do.
But, and actually some beautiful Riesling too in
Australia. Yeah, I have been in Australia in 2016 to work the vintage there, to see how Riesling grows under much warmer conditions, because like we're of course always talking about climate change. True. And everyone goes like, will you still be able to plant Riesling in your place in 20 years? And we always go like, it was not ripe enough for Riesling like 30 years ago, so we think we will be able to do it for another few years.
I guess you can kind of look at Australia as a sort of benchmark, right? It's like, well, if our climate keeps changing, then we can see what Australia does. And
yeah, we can see like the German, like our vineyard work has always been like made in a way to enhance the ripeness, because we were always like, the weather was always too cold. And so we were always trying to get the grapes ripe somehow. And so, for example, in the vineyard, we were always like taking away leaves so that the grapes would get the sun. So that's something that we have stopped doing in very warm summers, because we like need the leaves now to protect the grapes from sunburn, because like grapes can get sunburned.
Yeah.
And then they will just dry off and fall to the ground. And so our whole like vineyard work has adjusted a lot, and that is of course something where we can look to Australia, because they have they have had the situation like this for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And what we don't really do in Germany is like giving water to the vineyards, because we want the roots to grow deep. And we are also like, our estate has been certified organic and biodynamic for 20 years now. And therefore it's also kind of against our beliefs to like just add water to the vineyard. Like we want the wines to do the job themselves.
Yeah, yeah. That's incredible. So, I mean, a lot of history, 255 years. What's the production levels like? How much do you produce a year?
So we have just decreased the size of the winery a little bit.
Okay.
So the winery had grown to 25 hectares, but we decided to focus even more on the varieties that we really like, Riesling and Spätburgunder. So we got rid of all the Pinot Blanc, the Pinot Gris, and some other like German specialties.
Interesting. Okay.
And so now we are back at 19 hectares and produce between like 90 and 100,000 bottles a year. But next to it, we have another very exciting project. Like we founded a new estate last year.
Wow.
Not last year, like 4 years ago, that only produces sparkling wine, where because we have partnered up with the former chef du cave of Bollinger from Champagne. So Mathieu has led the production of Bollinger for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then he moved to Germany, and now, yeah, we have founded a new estate.
Well, that's a big name to have with you. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
No. So this is going to be a German sparkling wine.
Yeah.
With which grape are you going to be using?
So we'll do both. Like we'll do the classic blends with the Pinot varieties. So we have, of course, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Blanc, which is also a big trend in Champagne to use more Pinot Blanc because it keeps the acidity very well. But we will, of course, also be doing some Riesling sparkling.
Right.
And because Riesling with its like high acidity is also very nice for sparkling wine. Mm. And therefore, yeah, we'll do the classic blends, but we also do Riesling.
That's exciting. Sounds good.
So which one we will receive like in 2 weeks, I think, the sparkling? Are we having
also you're that far ahead already? Okay.
Yeah. Like the first vintage was 2019, and we have just started to release the first bottle last year.
Okay.
So actually, we received already with our first shipment of Riesling a few bottles of the sparkling. The idea was to find a place where we can showcase those sparkling, for this sparkling, and get the first feedback. And of course, we choose serving. So we had the two chefs like showing the bottles to the people. We offered to them, and the idea was to be able to present to the customers. So that's why tonight also we decided to do the dinner there, because there is a story behind. And everybody who tried the sparkling actually loved it. We also had a bottle for the staff party of the wine merchant. Everybody was amazed on the quality price of this bottle. So yeah, we're looking forward to receive both the Spat Burgunder and the sparkling in the next 2 weeks. And now we have only Riesling in stock at the moment. Those Spat Burgunder were carried by Sophie, so we will just try it together. And
yeah, nice. Okay.
And whatever.
Fantastic. And Spat Burgunder is quite a, I mean, in terms of
it's Pinot Noir
profile. Yeah. Okay. So it's like a Burgundy in a way.
Yeah. Right?
Consider now Germany is like the weather of Burgundy 25 years ago. So okay. That's why you have 12% of alcohol in this bottle. But when now you drink a Meursault or Pouligny Montrachet, you will get already 14% of alcohol. So the increase is there. And that's why the quality of also, of course, the people behind, but the quality of the wines have become exceptional, because more and more it's growing there.
And we have also gotten access to for example, like the Pinot wines that we plant, we buy the young wines from Burgundy. So we buy the Selection Marsal that gets also planted at the Côte d'Ivoire. We can buy now Barrix in France. Like we buy big oak barrels for Riesling that are made from oak from our local forest that are very local production. Okay. But the Barrix for Spätburgunder, we buy them, of course, in Burgundy because the people specialize in that. So we have not only have like the better climate, but we also have had access to the knowledge, to the techniques, and we also have in the area where our winery is very limestoney soils. So the soil that we have in our best vineyards in Gimmelding and Königsbach, it's a mixture of limestone, loam, and clay. So it's a soil blend that is exactly the same as the soil that you have in Burgundy. So we have the climate, we have the knowledge, and we have the soil. So it must be possible to do great Pinot in Germany.
Right.
And at the moment, like the wines are not cheap, but they are way cheaper and way more accessible than the wines in Burgundy.
Yeah.
And therefore they have been recognized all over the world. So at the moment we sell, like the demand for Pinot is even higher than the demand for Riesling at the moment.
Yeah.
Because everyone all over the world is looking for a good alternative to Burgundy. Like we are too, because like the wines got so expensive. And even if you want to, even if you're like willing to pay the price, then you get like an allocation of like one bottle or two bottles.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just no fun anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's one of my favorite wines, sort of red from Burgundy. But yeah, the price points are much higher, expensive taste. So it's good to know that actually I should be looking at Germany a bit more. So.
Oh, definitely. Also, like the vines are still quite young in Spat Burgunder or Pinot Noir. Because tell me if I'm wrong, but I think during the World War, it was not allowed to plant French varieties, or so you had to like restart everything, right?
There's some older vineyards that have been kept.
So the production is still very slow, very very little compared to everything else you have. So.
Yeah, also because like the older like. My father's generation, they were focusing on Riesling because Riesling is the German identity. It's a big thing, but it got, it didn't have its reputation anymore. So they were really putting all their energy in bringing Riesling back.
Okay.
And then with me and many like young friends my age, there's a young generation following into the estates now that don't just want to follow their parents' things.
Right.
And so they are looking for other things. And for many people, it's Pinot. So you have like a real young Pinot generation in Germany. Yeah. Like many of us have been working in France. Like we are like, of course, like talking to each other, tasting with each other. And therefore you have at least 10 or 15 very good producers that have now also started to make very, very nice Pinots. So that's a real movement. It's very exciting.
Okay. So Sophie, when you're not drinking your own stuff, what do you tend to go for? Are you a cocktail drinker? Is there any other wines that you like to explore? Or?
So we mostly drink wine, actually. Yeah. So sometimes, of course, like a cold beer as a starter is always very nice.
Which means you had a hangover, so you get a beer. Huh?
Fresh beer, or after wine tasting, we always have a beer. No, but apart from that, we drink lots of wine. Like we are very classy drinkers, I think. So we drink also lots of like Burgundy, champagne.
Yeah.
But we also drink lots of Jura at the moment. So it's a big, big trend. Like the wines are also quite scarce, very hard to get. Yeah.
But I suppose you're very close to all those areas, right? So
yeah,
must be really easy to access that stuff.
Yeah, like we can go there, we can travel there.
Yeah.
And it's also been very nice. Like we have been to Burgundy last year twice, and it was the first time that the producers were talking. Like, of course, like when we go visit someone, we always bring a bottle. And usually I would always bring Riesling because I think you always bring what is like your identity.
Yeah,
but
course.
People have been like, I have heard of German Spätburgunder.
Right.
Like they want to try. They are noticing that something is happening because they get told by their importers and by their partners all over the world that there is something happening. So it's really nice to get some exchange there.
Yeah.
But of course, we also drink lots of German wines. Like we never drink our own wines at home.
Okay. Good to know. Good.
What do you think about the food?
I like it a lot actually. And how about yourself? Other than, because you said you went somewhere last night, what other Thai food have you tried since you've been here?
Well, we've had, I don't think I know all the names, but we had the very good Pad Thai. We had very nice curry.
Chef Tonnet was here last week or last month, I don't know.
Well, he was here in December, actually, but we just released the episode. Yeah, it's good.
It's very nice for us to get fresh seafood because, like, of course, Germany, like, there is a little bit of the Baltic Sea that we have access to, but there's not very much good fish.
Well, you're going to Phuket, so there's great seafood down there.
Oh, yeah.
Very much looking forward to that.
Is that going to be holiday or still work?
So it's like, as wine growers live, it's always a mix of holiday and work. Right. But I did some emails by the pool this morning, so it felt a little bit like a holiday today.
Yeah, but you know, it's a wine industry in general. Even myself, or wine lovers, when you travel, you go to the wineries, you go to see the wine people, you go to the restaurant, you drink wine. It's like the whole world is wine.
It's not really work, is it? It's kind of more like a lifestyle, I guess.
Life is work, work is life.
But it's very nice because with wine, you always meet nice people. You meet people that like to eat, like to drink, usually very social people.
Yeah.
It doesn't really feel like work because it also gives you another like insight into the countries. Like if I would just be here as a tourist, I would have my like Lonely Planet guide with me and I would just like walk through the city.
Yeah.
But like that, we get like insights into places that we wouldn't see and that we wouldn't understand. And that's why I always like to meet the people that we work with when we travel.
For sure you didn't plan to come here.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining the podcast. I really appreciate it. It's always good to talk to new people in the industry and learn. And I'm a complete novice when it comes to Riesling and German wine. So it's really interesting to hear. Yeah. And people can go to your vineyards. Do you do tours?
Yeah, so people have to like book an appointment, but then they can visit and they can taste. And in general, like our area has like developed a very nice high quality wine tourism, especially through COVID, because people weren't allowed to travel outside of Germany. So they had to discover their own country. Mm. And but now it's really nice because it's an area where you have like maybe 15 or 20 of the very best wineries in Germany.
Very
close to each other, like maybe like 20 minutes drive in between. You have very nice hotels, very nice restaurants. You can like have a hike through the Palatine Forest or walk through the vineyards. So it's a very nice region to visit in general.
Okay, good. Well, look, for the audience in the show notes on Spotify and YouTube, I'll put links to the website and social media as well. If I'm ever in that part of the world, I'll definitely reach out to you because actually I've never really explored Germany much. I've been to Berlin a long time ago, but never been.
Was not for the vineyard.
No, it was not. But I have just never really explored Germany. So maybe get to one day.
No, it's really nice. It's just like 1 hour drive from Frankfurt Airport.
Right.
And then you can drive straight through to France because it's just another 3 hours drive till you are in Burgundy or Champagne.
Mm.
So it's a good area to explore.
Okay, good. So going back to Phuket again, which part of Phuket are you going to be? Because it's quite a big island. So,
I think we're going to be in Surin.
Surin area. This thing next to the shop that we have.
Always go to the shops.
The wine shop has to be in a radius of 10 kilometers minimum.
Otherwise, we cannot go.
It was a very good beach near there, actually. It's very lovely.
Actually, it's one of the best area. We don't necessarily always push to be next to our shops, but yeah, Laguna, Surin, Kamala. Most likely it's where I will go, so that's what I would suggest.
And if you go up north a little bit, you get to Chongdele. Mm-hmm. Chantilly is great. There's so many amazing restaurants and bars. It's really up and coming.
But Phuket is on fire now, actually. We see it like so. Now we just hired a team, actually, already more than 6 months ago now. Mm-hmm. But South Thailand is booming like it never has before. So
And they just
speaking about new things, it is actually a big thing for Thailand. When you see like the whole Thailand slowing down a little bit, Phuket is just going crazy. Mm-hmm. Samui also. So yeah, something is happening down there, which is good, I guess.
Yeah, all the Russians escaping the country probably. Because I mean, we do actually have a huge sort of Russian community down in the islands. But they just built a new motorway, right, from the airport down south in Phuket. So I think that really opened up the island a lot.
No, of course, yeah. I was there like last month also, just for a few days. It's insane. It's building everywhere. There's so many beautiful restaurants, so many new things to see, so many people.
Any good restaurants you recommend?
You should ask my team in Phuket. To be honest, I love to cook a barbecue at home when I go holidays.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah. It's not where I'm the best to recommend food. But there is a place I always like to go. It's Bocconcino. A very traditional Italian restaurant on the little lake in Laguna.
Yeah.
So definitely a place to stop by.
Yeah.
But the choice is very, very, very big. So
yeah, it is. I lived there for a little while.
What do you recommend?
I mean, so I was there for 6 months for a consultancy. I used to do a bit of like F&B consultancy because I was in the industry for 15 years before. But it's Siam Supper Club. That's the place I kind of helped open.
It is nice.
Guillaume sort of helped. He actually helped with the whole wine selection and process. So I don't know if what they're doing now. I know they've got a new chef. But that whole area, like you said, it's just many options.
Booming.
And it's crazy because they just keep adding. And it's like, is there enough people? But I guess there is.
I guess it's working in a way.
For sure. Okay, guys. Well, look, it was great to have you on the show. Thank you so much. Guillaume, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you for introducing me to Sophie. Sophie, thanks for joining. Cheers. Enjoy your rest of your time in Bangkok. If I can help in any way, I'm here. And for the audience, please check out the show notes for all the links to the website. We're obviously on Spotify, iTunes, and now YouTube. So,
and try Riesling.
Yes. And try more Riesling.
And travel to Germany.
Cheers. From Germany. Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers.